big center net.
Going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get it going. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. It is a Monday, June 2nd. With Aaron Vickers, back from the World Championship of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale's on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Hopefully you're all doing well. Flames Talk available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Hello, Vix.
Hello, Patrick.
Good to have you aboard. Thanks for being along with us on this Monday. And on Friday afternoon, we got some Flames news and some really good news for our next guest as the Flames made it official. I think based on the way the season ended and how successful the penalty kill was in the back half of the season for the Flames, I don't think this was a significant surprise, but was still awesome to see the Flames promoting Trent Cull to a full-time assistant role in the NHL for next season. Of course, Trent took over as an assistant in the back half of the season and was an assistant on the bench with the Flames for the final 48 games of the season. Started the year with the Wranglers in the American League, returned to the Wranglers for the playoffs, and now a part of the Flames coaching staff going forward. Trent joins us now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Mr. Cull, it's a Monday, so we thought we'd make you feel like home talking to us on a Monday. How we doing, sir?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, that's, we went through a few Mondays without each other, so I'm going through withdrawal.
When we told the listeners that we were having you on, a couple wondering about the mustache. What fate will become the mustache as we move into next season?
Well, that's top priority, of course, right? I mean, but it's funny, as soon as the season finished, I shaved it off just to kind of, just switch things back up again. But there's a little fur back up there now. That's all okay. I know. I guess we'll have to see what that gets to in the fall.
Okay. Good to know. So there's a little bit of a teaser. Hey, tell us about the last month or so. So you finish game 82 in Los Angeles. All those players debut. You finish the season disappointing because you missed the playoffs by 1 point. Then you head back to the Wranglers and two really hard-fought games against Coachella Valley. And then the season comes to an end for you coaching two teams this year. But what has the last number of weeks been like since the last game you coached? I guess take us through the process of finding out you were going to be a head coach full time, an assistant coach full time with the Flames next year.
You know what? I think there is just for me personally, after you lose twice, right? So I felt like it was a little bit twice as hard almost at the end of the season. So I ran around for 2 weeks like a dog chasing his tail, just because you're so used to being on kind of high octane flying around. And then the last 2 weeks I've slowed right down. So it's been good. Like, I've just been local, went and saw my son. He was in the final four of the Null and his team in Minnesota. So I went and saw that for a weekend. Me and my one younger son went down and watched them. And so that was good. So, but after that, it's been a lot of family time. I've been in Calgary for the most part, all of that, just trying to be a dad and pick up the slack and the honey-do list and all that. And then, professionally, it was actually kind of quiet, you know, just because they had asked for some time to kind of sort through some things, you know, and I'm sure that is, you know, with, especially with Husky and over at the World Championships and, yeah, you know, different things. But I think things took a little bit of time, and then kind of everything kind of came to a head or to fruition over the past week.
Let me ask you this kind of a broad question, Trent. Why do you think the move to the Flames in late December, why do you think it worked out so well? Like, what about the fit of that coaching staff, and what about what you bring? Why did it seem to mesh so well and so quickly from your perspective?
I mean, I don't know. I guess that's maybe it's better suited to ask Huss that, because I feel bad I'm sitting here talking about myself and the idea. It was just that
maybe more so, what about the coaching staff on their end made it such a good fit for you to roll into?
Well, that's one thing, and I've said this before, and I've shouted this to peers and whoever else I've been talking to the last little while, and guys have, just so you know, two guys around the league have echoed this back to me about how good of a job the Calgary staff did here. I mean, there's a bunch of situations and circumstances talking about our team, but, you know, for a team that, you know, let's say wasn't like renowned or coming in as maybe winning a cup and maybe not like spending all of the money and kind of in not, I don't know what you call it, retool, rebuild, whatever those things are, different looks what our team is. We were a very competitive team, and I hear that a lot from our peers and how we worked and made sure we're getting on the right side of the puck. And so I guess what I would say, it was easy coming into an atmosphere where I think it was demanding, but very fair in the sense of how Husk operates. And for me, he was great for me. I mean, he afforded me the luxury of get on your training set there, get the training wheels off and get going and run the PK and get it up and running. And he kind of just let me have it. And I think I don't know if I told you guys this before, I think the first 7 games I was coaching, we got a shorthanded goal against us every one. So, but we got up and running and I thought we did a pretty good job and the players responded really well, but it was really easy to come into that staff because I think those guys did a really good job. I think Huss should be up for coach of the year, you know, I mean, and I think the staff did a fantastic job.
What was the reaction when all those shorthanded goals start going, like couple of side eyes as you're getting your feet wet?
Well, you know what? It was kind of just, there was no confidence. There was no confidence in our group. I don't think anyone had confidence putting their leg over the boards from the player standpoint. I mean, I guess better off asking them. And you know what? It took us a little while there. Like the month of January was rough. But it had been rough, you know? And so then all of a sudden, I think the best thing I think for the PK was that break of Four Nations. It allowed me to kind of dig in and Husk could give me some assignments and says like, should we change? Should we figure this out? What do you think is right? And so I took there was some time off there. And I think we all jumped in on what we were doing. We had to do a better job with it. But we also did a couple things that I think catered to our group. And that's the biggest thing, I guess I'll say I learned is you can have all the ideas in the world. You can have a great system or whatever in place, but you've got to make sure it's something that's going to mesh with your group and actually maybe goes to their attributes, you know what I mean? Helps their attributes. And I think that's what my month of January took me a little bit to get that, straight in my head, which it does. You need to learn personalities. You need to learn people, strengths, areas to improve, et cetera. And I think from there, we all kind of got on the same page and took off from there.
You know, and I'm sure Vix will have some more questions on the PK, but the one that has been burning in my mind, and I meant to ask you towards the end of the season, but, you know, you're so in the trenches of trying to make the playoffs in the NHL and then coaching in the playoffs in the American League. I thought I'd save it for another time, but one of the things that Coach Huska talked about throughout the year, throughout the time you were with the team, was as the penalty kill really started to take on a new look, and I believe you finished 12th overall in the final 48 games and was even higher after the Four Nations break in terms of how strong that the Flames penalty kill was as you coaching it. And Ryan kept talking about the energy you brought to the meetings and kind of the buzz that you brought to the penalty kill room when you were going through it. What's your perspective on that? Like, take us through a Trent Cole penalty kill meeting and kind of what you try to bring to it.
No, I mean, you know what it is? It's I was afforded the luxury of coming into a group that was already up and running. And one thing, I guess, I can say is that I've been doing this a while now too, quietly, like, you know, I've been kicking around the American League forever, it feels like, and it had a little bit of time in the NHL. So what it was is you're coming in on an interim basis. You want to do a good job, but also, to be honest, just frank, I didn't give a rat's ass. I was like, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to be Trent Cole. I'm going to give these guys as much as I can to try to influx some energy, some different kind of juice, some maybe some different reactions. Because as a head coach, what I had been, it's you've got a bunch of things on your plate. Well, all of a sudden, my plate got just really kind of dialed in and very focused on one thing. So for me, what I wanted to do was just kind of try to bring energy. And I know what it's like to be a head coach. And I know because of all those things of spending so much time being an assistant coach or being a head coach, that you know what the head coach needs and you know what a team needs. And so those things, I tried to fill some of the gaps and the voids. And it's a really busy league. I mean, you know what I mean? So sometimes you get rolling and, you know, players are, you know, getting the same routines and coaches do, et cetera. And so someone comes in and maybe a breath of fresh air and whatever. And that's what I tried to do. And I just thought that whatever I could do, whether it be small, whether it be a giggle, whether it be running into guys in the dressing room, you know, like just something different and just bringing back a bit of a, I can't say it on the air, but something that starts with F and a little bit and finishes with a U. So bringing that attitude, I thought.
I like it. I like that. I think we all know what you're referring to. We're chatting with Trent Cull, new full-time Flames assistant coach, as that was announced on Friday. Trent joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline on this Monday edition of Flames Talk. It's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you, Vix.
Trent, when you're bringing that F and that U, what's the initial reaction you're getting from players that maybe aren't as familiar with you at that point?
A little bit of like, it took me a little bit too, you know, I wasn't doing it like week one or day one, you know what I mean?
Right,
like,
yeah.
And so, but, you know, I think you have to have a little bit of swagger. And I think if you expect what I've always said too, is that, you know, your team takes on a bit of the personality of the coach or coaches, you know, and I think that sometimes that's, you need to have a little life. And I think I've said to you guys in the past, sometimes I can be a little quirky and do whatever, but I think it's good for guys to be to maybe just have a little bit of different, you know what I mean, and not know what's coming next, you know what I mean. So I think that those things help. And hey, we all know we've sat in school, we've gone to college or done whatever, or go to our job every day. If it's the same thing every day, it kind of gets old, right? So we got to just make sure that we're keeping a little spicy for the boys.
And just circling back on the penalty kill, is that something you've specialized in earlier in your coaching career? Or was this sort of a new challenge, a new task for you once you got up to the Flames?
Yeah, and I'd never done the NHL before. I did it like, I'm going to say at least when I was an assistant coach in the Tampa organization was the last time I was doing it. So that's okay. Probably 8 to 10 years ago. So in the American League, right? So yeah. I felt very good about it. I felt confident about it, but the thing is to, you know, there's so many different parts of the PK, and it's not by far, it's not me or whatever. It's what caters to your players, what caters to your goaltenders. And I think that, and our guys were dialed in. I think, like I said, I thought Hoskar players, they were just a bunch of guys every night that I thought were really easy to coach and guys that were really dialed in on their jobs. And it took me more a little bit. And I think I've said this too before, but like, you understand, like these guys had Brad talking to them first for a while. Then all of a sudden Husk had to take over for a month, you know, and then all of a sudden there's a third voice in there. Right. So sometimes it just takes a little bit and maybe just the finally of having some consistency for them. It kind of all kind of came to, I guess, a better result.
This might be sort of a big picture question. I'm just curious from your perspective, how you've seen the structure of PK systems change or evolve over the course of even maybe the last 5 years.
Yeah, it has. It's really gone different with a lot of this. You know, the word is the diamond PK and how diamonds are working. And there's a lot of, there's been pressure in the past, but there's some teams that are excellent with certain points of pressure and how they handle it. And I mean, but you've got to have, you got to make sure you have the right team for that too, right? And there's certain things that, you know, Dallas is a great penalty kill. Well, holy cow. You know, all of a sudden you saw Dallas in the playoffs and it's amazing how these things that I've been watching, you know, just how I guess I'm going to jump, but the biggest thing I found is the challenge of coaching against the other team's best players and watching them. And it doesn't take them long. Like if you're doing something and all of a sudden, if it's once or twice, they're going to figure it out. And so if you're still doing it and not doing it correctly by the third time, it's going to cost you. And no different than I think coach had said too, like whenever you take two penalties, you still got a chance to win. When you start flirting with three, bad things happen. And I think that's something else. Our players did a really good job of moving their feet and checking in the second half of the year.
it's a bit of a copycat league. How much of your penalty kill philosophy comes from past experience, and how much is it watching other teams?
Yeah, you know what? It's not like we did a ton of changes, even from what was happening there at the start of the year. And the great thing is, like, Husk is a very good penalty kill coach and has shown that in the past. So I got a great resource there anytime, you know what I mean, that I want to talk or ask questions. And he's got some great things, and he was teaching me things there too. So I think that some of it is, as we moved along, we started tweaking some different things, and some things were things that other places had done. But other things, I think, too, is just things that I think were good for our group. And, you know, small little modifications that I was, you know, fortunate enough to kind of really get engulfed in everything and throw myself into it and see little tweaks that we could do that I wanted to see. And because, not to say this, but like, you know, in a careless way, but I mean, things were going so crappy there for a while that it didn't matter about making some changes because, you know, it was going crappy already anyways. And so by doing that, it afforded us some luxuries of trying things that kind of worked out for us.
Trent Culls with us, Flames assistant coach, and we found out on Friday that Trent will be a full-time member of the Flames coaching staff as an assistant on Ryan Huska's grouping next year. Joining us here on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, Trent, when you jumped in late December, how helpful was it that you had some pretty decent familiarity with some of the guys already, whether it was, you know, Connor Zary, Martin Pospisil from last year, obviously Dustin Wolf, Matt Coronato, so on and so forth. Like, you had a pretty good base of knowledge on a decent number of guys that you were walking into the locker room with. How helpful was that for you?
You know, I think it is good. I think it's really good. Like, you know, sometimes if you're walking into a room middle of the year and you don't know anybody, it can be tough. And I'm the first one to say, I'm just like somebody else too. I get nervous. You know what I mean? I'm trying to get up and running and sometimes making meetings. And it wasn't, you know, maybe at the start of the year, I said it, or when I took over, like it was like a little PK for dummies. It took me a little while to get up and running. Right. So the boys afforded me some time there too. And I think because there was a little bit of a past relationship there, and even, you know, a couple training camps go by. So you get to see some guys, you get, you know, talk to some guys in the NHL or for the Flames, whatever. So they knew he was a, you know, good-looking guy was coming in to coach him, so they just had to give me a little time to get up and running as well.
That was the main point, I think.
Yeah.
Was the most important part.
What? Oh, sorry, guys.
No, that was funny. That was funny. What do you learn, or what do you think the team learns? Maybe on both sides, as a group and you personally, to come so close and eventually not realize the goal. Like, everybody at the end of the year was talking about, yeah, it was a great season, we're proud of what we did, but we didn't accomplish the end goal. What do you think the group learns about that, and or from that, Trent? And what did you learn from coming that close and just falling short?
Yeah, well, you know what? You look at some of the strings the team went on at the start of the year, how good they were at the end of the year, like the amount of, like, how good a hockey we played, you know, and the points that we had taken and to get yourself in those spots. But, and then you watch the playoffs and then you see how good it is, you know what I mean? How hard those first two rounds of the NHL playoffs are, just fantastic to watch, I feel like. And I'm just a fan like everybody else. And so as I'm sitting back and watching, not only do you wish you made it, but then all of a sudden too, there's a little bit of, hey, like, our game has got to be really good. Like, it can't be just close. I mean, because close isn't going to get you or going to help you once you get there either, right? Like, it's amazing about how detailed you have to be, how strong you have to be, the battle, the effort to compete, and everything has got to be really good to get in the National Hockey League playoffs. And then the other thing is, you just don't want to get there either, right? Like, I mean, I think maybe if we were on the east side, we would have been in playoffs. It would have been a great experience. But, like, you know, I think the idea is when you get there, you want to be ready and armed so you can find a way to make sure that you're getting through some rounds of playoffs, because at that point, anything can then happen.
Trent, I guess all that said, what excites you most about the upcoming season for the Flames?
Well, younger players get better every year, which is really exciting. We've got, I mean, there's not a lot of turnover, I don't think, for our lineup, right? I mean, I haven't thought about this a lot in the sense of being a Calgary Flames coach, right? I've kind of been a split. I've had a bit of a split personality the last month here or so, but you know, so there's some promising things there about having a group, knowing the group that we have. And I know for Coach Husk, who spent some time, and obviously the World Championships has been really busy, but you know, there's a lot of good results of what, you know, his message and what he did last year. And now we know who we have coming back, and there might have been some different guys coming in last year. Well, hopefully now we can, you know, even get off to a better start and carry it on throughout the way. There's, I think, some more familiarity since with a team that, you know, been together now a little bit longer.
Trent, what does the rest of the summer look like for you as, you know, watching hockey starts to come to an end? You've only got, seven more games at most in the NHL to go, and the American League's winding down, World Championships done, so on and so forth. So now, what does the rest of the summer look like for you?
Yeah, no, I've missed the NHL games on the last few nights. I tell you what, it's a little bit, you miss it for sure because it's been great to watch. But no, my family, my oldest guy's all coming back, so my family will be all together, which is great. I still got a couple of guys that are in high school. You know, one just actually started or had his graduation last week, so kind of exciting times in and around the house. And but our big accomplishment or big thing that we want to achieve is we're going to spend some time for the Stampede this year. I've never seen it, never been a part of it. So I'm looking for any, I guess, pointers, tips, whatever it is I need to know, but we're really excited to be a part of that and go check that out this year.
You got the boots already?
No.
Oh,
that's what my oldest son said. He goes, where are we going to get boots? You got a deal somewhere, Dad, or what?
I think you could probably walk in and flash a business card and maybe get a deal at Alberta Boot or something like that. I think that you could...
Drop Pat's name.
Don't do that. They'll kick you right out of the store. But you know, if you just...
So I'm not getting any tips from you guys. Is that what
you're
telling me?
We'll give you all the tips in the world on where to go at Stampede. You, if you need tips, we can definitely compile a list for you if you want.
Nice. I would love that. That's great. Thank you.
We'll make sure that we do that. Okay. Well, that's only a few weeks away. So rest up, get ready, and enjoy the rest of the postseason. And most importantly, congratulations on the news from last week. Hey, Trent, it's been a pleasure getting to chat with you for two seasons as an AHL and NHL coach. So awesome to know that that'll continue going forward. So congrats on the news. Thanks for joining us on this Monday. Hey.
Thank you very much, you two. I appreciate it very much.
Be well. Hey, we'll talk soon.
Take care, boys. Thank you.
It's Trent Cull, now a full-time assistant on the Flames staff. Next year's Calgary Flames staff, Ryan Huska. Trent Cull as an assistant. He'll continue his good work on the penalty kill. I thought it was really interesting just kind of listening to him talk about the meetings and what he...
The energy.
The energy... Tailoring the penalty kill, not to what he wants, but to what fits the skill sets and the personnel. That was really interesting. It'll be Brian Huska with Trent Cull, and then Kale McLean. Brad Larsen returns to the staff after his hiatus. And, of course, goaltending coach Jason LaBarbera, video coach with just an impeccable record this year. Jamie Pringle as well will be a part of the coaching staff this year. Thanks so much to Trent Cull for joining us. Thanks to Jordan and the Flames PR staff for setting that up. And Trent Cull joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's Steinberg and Vickers on this Monday edition of the program. Vic's back with us for this week on Flames Talk. Back after, you're a little more than 3 weeks. You're over in Europe for the World Championship.
Flew out the 4th for some pre-tournament relaxation. Got back last Wednesday.
Okay.
We'll call it 3.5 weeks. Not quite 4.
Yeah.
Good little venture, good little excursion.
Wednesday was the 28th, so that's 24 days. So yeah, about 3.5 weeks.
There we go.
Good on you.
Told there'd be no math.
Me too, and I still try and I still fail. How was the experience? Give us the before we get into the Flames specific stuff. How was the World Championship? It took part in Herning, Denmark, is kind of the auxiliary spot, and Stockholm, Sweden was the main hub of the 2025 World Championship, Men's World Championship. Just, I guess, take us through being in both cities and being around a massive, massive sporting event on the European calendar.
It, I can't speak much to the environment of Herning, to be honest with you. I didn't explore the city much. I had been previously. They were a co-host in 2018. And that was the first...
Oh, that was Herning and Copenhagen,
yes,
that did it together?
Yes.
Okay.
And so that was the first 5 days of the tournament as well. And that is usually drinking from a fire hose from a work perspective, because I'm trying to get everything I need out of those eight teams in a span of basically 4 days, the fifth being a quasi-travel day to Stockholm. And there was a Saturday night opener of the tournament. The tournament starts on a Friday. The first Saturday, had the opportunity to go out in Herning. And I kind of declined, because Herning, if I'm being honest, is a population of about 40 to 45,000. They do have one street that I would define as their main central hub, with bars, with restaurants. But I felt I was probably not missing much by having a beer at my Airbnb and getting ready for the day after.
So what we're saying is that...
Don't go out of your way.
Vix is not applying for the job of
ambassador.
The head of tourism Herning is not high on Vix's list of jobs.
Sorry, side tangent.
Yes, please.
There is no airport in Herning. The closest airport is a 30-minute train plus 15-minute bus ride. There's no direct train.
So it's an out-of-the-way spot is what you're saying.
Yeah, you'd have to consciously plan to go, and there's no reason to consciously plan to go. And it's not easy to get in and out of unless you are private jetting it.
Okay.
And I don't have the Steinberg bank account.
There.
So
yeah,
I'm not quite there.
I'm a big PJ guy. Me and Shan are rolling in private jets on the rig.
But Stockholm? Beautiful, lovely, great city. I would go back in a heartbeat if they hosted it again next year, which they're not. But had they been the
Who's
host
next year?
It's in Switzerland.
Oh,
Davos, I believe, and I can't remember the second city. Okay. But that one's going to obviously be worth going to. But Stockholm, it was quite a lovely city. I would have recommended you going there. However, you've got different travel plans, and that's perfectly fine. Don't take any of my advice ever. I'm not even sad
or
upset about it.
It's a little difficult. It's a little difficult to go to Scandinavia as a solo traveler if you're doing it. Like, I'm not going on like a shoestring budget, but it is flipping expensive in Scandinavia. They're not on the euro, and
no, neither is Denmark. Like,
yeah,
come on,
Denmark,
guys.
Denmark, Sweden, like, they're not on the euro, and they charge a premium for being in Scandinavia. So it's like, you know what? Maybe I'll go there not solo one day.
Tell you what, beers in either Denmark, whether I started in Copenhagen for a little 2-day mini sort of vacation, or in Herning or in Stockholm, beer isn't the cheapest thing in the world there. Don't go there for a booze cruise. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Okay. Now, what about in arena atmospheres?
How wasn't as good as last year.
No,
that's step one.
Last year was Ostrava and Prague in Czechia,
and Czechia won
the whole thing.
Gold. In Prague's O2 Arena.
Yeah.
Like that'll, and maybe I'm tainted forever.
Well, and the biggest game Sweden played in Stockholm was the semi, and they got routed by the Americans, right? So it's tough to.
It's tough
to have the sexy atmosphere in a bit of a blowout.
In all fairness, their round robin finale came against Canada, and that was probably as good an atmosphere as it got in the tournament for me. As you mentioned, the quarterfinals didn't go very well, and even the bronze medal, there wasn't a lot of energy in the building because the expectation was they'd be playing for gold, so there wasn't that excitement, there wasn't that buzz, there wasn't that energy. And to be perfectly honest, and Rasmus Andersson admitted as such, they got off to a really bad start against Denmark in the bronze medal game just because of the letdown, the emotion of not playing for gold on home ice.
Yeah.
Really did get to them for probably the first 30 minutes of the game, and that was reflected in the crowd, or maybe the crowd reflected in the performance of the team. Kind of a chicken and egg scenario. But yeah, I mean, and to be honest, the capacity for Avicii Arena in Stockholm was like 12,500. So you didn't have the same volume. You didn't have the same buzz as you did the year before. And it might be unfair to compare everything to Czechia winning on home ice in that arena. But it just, it didn't match up to the expectation I had in my head, to be perfectly honest. And I was still great, but I think I just had just a year prior hit the all-timer. And now everything will forever be compared to Czechia winning at home.
And it's named for Avicii.
It was originally called the Globe, but Avicii is from Sweden, from Stockholm.
So they named it after
him. So they've named it after him.
Who passed in
It's a pretty cool arena, too, I will say
It looks great on the outside. Kind of looks a little Sphere Vegas.
If they ever redid the outside with the panels of Vegas,
perfect shape for it. Okay, so Flames had plenty of representation.
Yeah, no shortage.
And Sweden went the deepest of the Flames representation with Michael Backlund and Rasmus Andersson, Captain Rasmus Andersson. You spoke to both guys multiple times while you were over there. What were some of your takeaways from chatting with Flames captain Michael Backlund and Team Sweden captain Rasmus Andersson?
First of all, both players couldn't be more accommodating to me. I know this is kind of a little bit inside baseball, but the amount of time and consideration they gave me was absolutely phenomenal. And keep in mind here, this is a tournament in Sweden. We're talking about two Swedes. One's the captain, one's the assistant captain that captained them to gold back in 2018. Their media obligations are insane. It was funny. I shouldn't say somehow because I just asked to be added to it, but there's a WhatsApp media group chat, particularly for Team Sweden. And they send out a text saying, get your requests in with 6 minutes remaining in the third period. And sometimes I would wait and sometimes I try to jump on it early. And all you see is like 50 different people text seven different numbers. Rasmus Andersson's the captain. Rasmus Andersson postgame would have had, between TV and print, would have had six or seven stops just to get off the ice back to the dressing room. Michael Backlund wasn't that far behind. Each player made sure I got absolutely what I needed whenever I needed it. It was fantastic. Tip of the cap to them for being so accommodating. And not just in the good times. They got beat by Canada. They were still available. They got bounced in the quarters. They were still available. They won bronze. Bronze is not even a consolation prize. You get to leave with something, but it's not the color that they want. Still fantastic. So from a relationship of reporter, journalist to player, I can't tip my cap enough for how available they were. And in English, too. That's the other thing. They're doing 90 rounds of Swedish, and then they've got to answer probably the same dumb five questions I have in English. And there wasn't an eye roll. There wasn't I just did this, or can you just get it from a Swede? No, they were both fantastic from that perspective.
Any takeaways? I mean, Raz, of course, has a lot being talked about back here domestically. I think he stayed in Sweden. I think Michael's back in Calgary now. But what about the Rasmus conversation in terms of kind of the bigger picture and what the future looks like? Because what he had said on Locker Cleanout Day is, I'm going to the World Championship. I'm going to focus on that, getting an opportunity to play in my home country, and then I'll dive into what comes next. And I know that you did have a chance to kind of chat a little off the record with him. Maybe not off the record, but off mic with him about that type of stuff.
Yeah, I had him. Sweden held a media day, a week or 2 weeks into the tournament, where every player was available at the hotel. And I had about a 10, 11, 12-minute conversation with Rasmus Andersson. At that point, he hadn't been able to take a breath to ponder or consider what his future is. Of course, he's eligible for an extension this summer. Does it fit for player? Does it fit for team? About 3 days, he told me, 3 days after the season ended, he went over to Sweden, got the family situated, and basically departed for pre-tournament games for Sweden prior to the World Championship. So he didn't have a lot of runway to sit there and ponder his future. At that point, and it might have changed to this point, because it has been a week and a half since it's been one week since the World Championship.
About a week, yeah.
Wow. Anyways, time flies when you're having fun. I don't think he was any closer to coming up with a number or scenario that he would need to fit. And he reiterated a lot of things he said at Locker Cleanout, but he also was like, what fits for me might not fit for the team. What fits for the team might not fit for me. So he was very cognizant, very understanding of the situation that he's in.
Guy, hey.
He's very aware of all things that are going on from a team perspective, from a business perspective, from a media perspective, so on and so forth. And another thing that he touched on was, you know, at locker cleanout, he spoke, I don't know if it was in passing or briefing, but about the 10%. And one of the things he reiterated to me about it is, I'd rather have that 10% go after me than go after a Connor Zeri or a Matt Coronato. If they need somebody to fire arrows at, fire them at me, because I've been around long enough. I can take it. I know how to take it and park it. If they need a target, if they need somebody to direct anger or angst at, better me than the kids. So that was another thing that I took away from that. Okay. I found that particularly interesting because, I mean, he was the captain of Sweden for a reason. And he wears a letter in Calgary for a reason. I hadn't really considered that sort of element. But so if you need a lightning rod, he basically says, pick me. Because guess what? Anonymous blogger or person that has 8 digits behind their Twitter handle, it's not going to bug me. It'll bug me if you go after one of my teammates. One of my young teammates.
I even remember one time him getting really upset during the bubble season, the 21 season, and somebody asked him a question about Youssef Alimak. I think it was Wes. And we know how
they get along.
How
Rasmus
much Raz has an affinity for
how Wes was at Worlds, by the way, just to give an insight to their relationship.
But he was really upset with the question about, like, basically saying, hey, Yuso's struggling. What do you do as a fellow young defenseman to help him? He gave a really good answer, but I remember him being upset. He's like, because you're going after a younger guy, and he's always taking it upon himself. It's why I think I keep saying they may be forced to trade Rasmus Anderson, but it'll be a void in the locker room if he's gone.
Agreed.
Because the voice, the presence that he's got inside that room. And we all understand why a deal would or might have to happen. We do. But it'll be a loss on the ice end and inside the locker room. He was named the captain of the Swedish team with a lot of other captain material guys there for a reason.
Yeah, it wasn't an accident. A large part of it was when I talked to Sam Hallam, the coach of Sweden, why this guy? Rasmus sat for the first two games of the Four Nations, got into the third.
Which meant nothing, unfortunately.
Which meant nothing. Sweden. But he was out there blocking shots. He was out there, you know, chirping, being physical, doing all that. And the coach had said, you learn a lot about a guy and whether he's there for himself or for the team. And not playing those two games in the way he played in the third showed him that Rasmus Anderson was a team first guy. And that's largely why he got the letter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in conversations with him, even at Worlds, talking about, yeah, go after me, not the young guys. I don't know if this is going to be a stretch or anything, but there's captain material at the NHL level in Rasmus Anderson.
And we're talking about a guy, like, take a look at some of the names, like a veteran Swedes on that team.
Backlund,
Michael Backlund.
He captained them in 2018 to an undefeated record.
But if they wanted to go in other directions, Zibanejad, William Karlsson, Elias Lindholm, you mentioned Michael Backlund, Philip Forsberg, Jonas Brodin, Adam Larsson. Like, we're talking about guys like established leaders, veterans in the NHL, and they went with Rasmus Anderson, which I just think is an important underlining of how important that guy is inside this Flames locker room. We heard your conversations with Adam Klapka. We heard your conversations with Sam Honzek, Dan Vladar, who had a really, really good tournament for Czechia.
Should have been their starter in the semifinal game?
Quarterfinal game. Yeah. They went with
Vemelka.
Vemelka, and then Vladar came in for the final 40 minutes, but by that time the game was pretty much done and dusted. And all pretty good. Mackenzie Weegar, of course, for Team Canada. Ryan Huska is an assistant. Sean Kelso also there
Ken
for
Kabelka.
Team Canada. Kabelka was there. Was Doc Ald there as well? Doc Ald was there.
I believe
too.
He was there. Yeah.
All the Flames players seem to perform generally well, and also a really, I think, big development opportunity for Klapka and Honzek playing in the Men's World Championship. And Klapka kind of didn't even start playing.
No, he was non-roster.
And then he got his way in, had the one big game
but was able to be a regular player by the end of it.
I think for him and Hanzik, maybe more so Hanzik, but Klapka can't be excluded as well. Playing in high leverage games like this against some of the best players in the world does nothing but help your development. Hanzik in particular, I remember I had a conversation with Ryan Huska, just, you know, what can this do for this player's development? And Hanzik had told him, I think it was the game against Sweden, it's like, this is the fastest game I've ever played in my life. So when you're playing in situations and it's not always going to go your way and you're going to struggle and there are going to be bumps along the way, but playing in games like that just shows a player, especially a young player,
on Twitter,
how much more runway they have to go in order to be a full-time NHLer.
He's Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Shan Virgie and Cam Hughes are outstanding producers this hour as we start to wrap things up on Flames Talk. This hour has been The Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale's on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.